And then there were four. How about this, folks? NC State is going to the Final Four. Who would have ever thought that we would see the day, especially with this group, especially under Kevin Keats? That was the big surprise of Sweet 16 weekend. We appreciate you all joining us. As always, I'm Kevin Sweeney, joined by Brad Cavallaro on the CBU Central pod. Brad, I don't know what the odds were on BovadaSportsbook.com that NC State would be in the Final Four, but they can't have been high.
No, especially not, or maybe even like during the ACC tournament. I bet the odds didn't even increase until they got to what, the semifinal, until they got to Friday. Well, the Virginia game was on Thursday, right? So maybe right after that Michael O'Connell prayer went in, maybe that's when their Final Four odds, you know, were even drawing live.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's funny because I think on one hand, like when that, you know, when they beat Duke in the quarters, we were both kind of like, not a big deal. Like, gets Duke to the tournament earlier, maybe saves Keats' job, 50-50, right? Then they beat Virginia, and you're like, all right, well, kind of too little too late. Was hoping to get rid of this Virginia team from the tournament. And here they are playing for the Final Four. I think the other thing that's like kind of worth noting, like, yeah, NC State got to play Oakland in the second round. That's a big deal. But they did just have to beat two really good teams to get to the Final Four. Like, this was not like a complete gift path. Sometimes these 11 seeds get an easy, easy road. They still had to beat Duke and, you know, obviously beat Marquette. And they did. And now we get DJ Burns versus Zach Edey in the Final Four. Just a wild, wild thing. I mean, Kevin Keats is inevitable. He's out Brownell.
I mean, he had so many years where they were right there, right? They had previously the highest net to ever miss the tournament. He had that really good team at Wilmington. I was there when they played Duke Tough, Brandon Ingram and Duke, in the first round at the Dunk. He had a few really good teams at Wilmington there. And then NC State, they were always right around the cut line. And it looked like he was done. You know, he took so many weird transfers. I remember being like, why is he running off Isaiah Miranda to take Ben Middlebrooks? You know, Miranda's got all this upside. Let him breathe a little bit, and maybe you'll have a star down the road. Middlebrooks was the backup at Clemson. But Middlebrooks has been great. Diarra's been awesome, and Burns has been unreal. They're three big man trio. And I can't claim to be following NC State super closely the whole season. But at the start, they were starting their freshman, Dennis Parker, right?
Were they?
And now he's completely out of rotation.
I remember when they took O'Connell, we were kind of like, well, this must mean Keats is all the way in.
Right, it's like they're taking a backup point guard transfer when you have Lyron Thomas and Breon Pass. Breon Pass was supposed to be this, you know, great untapped potential, who was playing football instead of basketball, and now here we go. Like, oh yeah, why is he taking O'Connell as a transfer? But
yeah, it's particularly funny because they quote unquote went all in on the with all these portal guys and wound up with a 7-man rotation. Like Ernest Ross doesn't play; he was in the mix last year. MJ Rice doesn't play. You mentioned Breon and those guys. Cam Woods was like a last second take. He doesn't play. Like they've shrunk it really down to this seven man group of O'Connell, Horn, Taylor, and Morcell as like wings, and then Diarra, Middlebrooks, and Burns as bigs. And it has
all transfers and all like mediocre transfers.
That is true. Yeah.
Right, like Casey Morcell was horrible at Virginia. That was a reclamation project. O'Connell was pretty bad at Stanford. That was a reclamation project. Jaden Taylor was solid at Butler, but he was in the doghouse. He wasn't even starting by the end of the year at Butler last year, and Butler was terrible. You know, Burns was at Winthrop. Diarra and Middlebrooks were coming off the bench. Diarra was the number one JUCO player, right? He wasn't starting or playing very much for Dennis Gates last year. So they took a bunch of reclamation projects, and it all blended together. It gives hope to every team who's starting from scratch in the portal, and it's just got to grab a couple of decent guys and cobble it together.
Is this the most out-of-nowhere Final Four team you can remember? Like, this is not, like, the elite mid-major team. This isn't the high-major team that really underwhelmed its talent. Oregon State didn't make the Final Four, right? Like, I'm not sure I can think of a team that was more just like, so that team's playing in this event?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess if we're saying that, like, some of the Syracuse or the UCLA recently that were in the playing games had just a higher talent level. I guess
and
that's
UCLA was the COVID year. There was kind of some inherent like uncertainty.
And then there was Loyola and VCU and George Mason. That's going back pretty far. And as you said, those were high win total teams from mid major leagues. I guess Florida Atlantic.
Yes, but I mean FAU is 30 wins.
Yeah, and this is kind of a little off the path here, but whenever people claim that the transfer portal is hurting college basketball, specifically because fans aren't going to know their players as well, I scoff at that every time because they just want to win. And there's not one NC State fan that's like, you know, this whole thing would have been a lot more rewarding if we were playing Ernest Ross over Diarra. Like, find me that person. That person does not exist.
That is true. That I agree with. Look, I think the whole story is fascinating. I think the run certainly validates a lot of stuff about kind of the just complete unknown nature of this tournament. But there, I mean, look, they have won 9 straight elimination games. I mean, how crazy is that? I mean, look,
true elimination, do or die.
I think I saw, you know, again, like the odds that were set if you were to like play out each game based on KenPom, and again, I don't know what the numbers would be if you went through like a sports book like Bovada or whatever. I didn't look at the lines, but like if you use like the KenPom win probability or the Evan Mia win probability, it was something like 1 in 10,000 that you would win all these games. Like truly just like a complete nutso result. And the craziest thing is, again, outside of that Virginia game, they haven't been, like, overly, like, this hasn't been, like, fluke central, right? Like, you know, Loyola's Final Four, it was, like, buzzer beater, buzzer beater, buzzer beater.
Oakland had the ball, tie game, 10 right. seconds left, and they ran that goofy play where their center was at, like, half court and turned it over. And then I'm sure that we'll get into the whole shooting variance discussion with Marquette's 4-for-31. Like, at some point, you just got to hit shots. Like, enough of, we were unlucky. Oh, you know, the statistics, you know, if we shot 30 more, we'd hit 15 of them. Like, at some point, you just got to hit shots. It's basketball.
Yeah, I mean, look, I do think it's the nature of the tournament, right? Like, inevitably, if you're Marquette and you lose a game because you shoot 4-for-31 and you miss a bunch of open shots, you don't just get to be like, well, bad luck. You have to be like, yeah, like, we kind of shit the bed. But I do think, to a certain extent, when you do look at the pattern of how teams have shot against NC State, you can say, like, yeah, there's been a lot of luck involved in advancing.
It's not like they have any length on the perimeter. Like, they have the exact opposite roster structure that you would designed to prevent three-pointers. Right? They have no wings. Their guards are small. Bigs are bigs.
These people kept trying to, like, get me, like, you know, I got a bunch of ACC fans hating on me for tweeting that, like, it seemed like both those teams just had, like, incredible luck. And inevitably, all these ACC fans are like, you're a hater, you're a loser, and whatever. But I had to laugh. Like, they kept, like, really emphasizing, like, no, trust us. Like, these teams are good defensively. It's like, why is Clemson good defending threes? Because of Joe Girard? Like, come on. Let's be serious.
Clemson. I was so kind of critical the whole year that they would start Chauncey Wiggins at the three. I'm like, that's ridiculous. Clark got healthy and got back in there, and Godfrey gave him some great minutes too. But going super big for Clemson seemed to work. They made the Elite Eight. I guess if you go super big, it gives you a little 3-point variance insurance for your own stuff. But yeah, I can't believe Clemson played. That's the Clemson stuff might be a bigger shock than NC State, to be honest.
It's super crazy, right? Clemson beating Arizona, like, just a complete melt. I mean, look, I had it. I know I bet on Bovada that Arizona would win and cover. I think everybody did. Like, no one gave Clemson a chance.
I didn't give Clemson a chance against the Mountain West. Game one against New Mexico.
The funny thing was Clemson played ridiculously well in all those games too. Like, I didn't feel like NC State, I felt like, you know, they were just kind of skating by. Like, I thought Clemson outplayed Arizona. I thought Clemson outplayed Baylor. Like, they would jump out on them early and then roll. It was crazy.
And it's kind of fitting that Arizona takes Caleb Love. At the time, I was saying, oh, he's got to go to Rutgers or Mississippi State, one of these, like, defensive-minded teams that's desperate for some offense. He goes to Arizona. It works out incredibly well, and then it ends by Caleb Love being Caleb Love. It could end no other way.
I mean, look. Caleb got a lot of heat for that individual game, but it was, again, it was the experience you knew you were signing up for, right? Caleb Love, the Caleb Love that Arizona got this season won them a lot of games. Arizona would not have been as good of a team without Caleb Love. But you always knew there was a chance he was going to do this, and that's what he did.
Are you worried at all about Arizona long term, or is this just the calm before the storm?
I don't know. What do you like? I'm sort of baffled by the whole thing, right? Because I think next year they're going to be a top 5 to 10 team. I know, like, I started working my way too early. And I'm sitting there. And I'm like, all right, like, Arizona's going to bring back. They're going to bring back KJ Lewis, Jaden Bradley, Kylan Boswell, and Crevis. And they're going to add Carter Bryant, Jozon Sannin, and supposedly they want to transfer shooting guard and a transfer four. Like, they're gonna be pretty damn good.
Transfer shooting guard probably means somebody's leaving. Does Caleb Love have another year too?
Yeah, technically. I don't see why he would use it.
I mean, is he an NBA prospect?
No, probably not.
Yeah, Arizona could easily be number one next year, even if it's just Bradley, Lewis, Sannon, a transfer, and Kribas. That could be the number one team easily.
Yeah, they're going to be really good. And their March performances have been bad. But, like, I mean, you can't be great in March until you are great in March, right? I mean, Purdue is the Chokers, now they're in the Final Four. Like, we do this thing every year. So I'm not quite, like, alarm bell central yet. I do think, look, like, is it reasonable to suggest that Tommy Lloyd might be better recruiter than coach? Yeah, probably.
Whenever you can pull those European top 75 recruits out of the sky, that's quite the cheat code to have.
Morauskas would be a great Friar, by the way. Yep.
I think we have our eyes on Gavin Griffiths.
Makes some sense.
Well, I'm in on. Even though he had like a horrific shooting year in the college basketball scouting video, his percentiles are like in the toilet. So that's a little concerning. He basically had a Garway season for the exact opposite player of Garway.
That is wild.
Anyway, want to talk some UConn?
I was there, and like I really thought that Illinois was going to give him a game.
Clean was so dominant. He was unbelievable. That was the best he's ever played, by far. And the whole Brad Underwood, like, we're just going to keep taking it at him. Oh, we're not going to prepare. Like, this is something that we see all the time in the Big Ten.
So I think those quotes were, like, wildly out of context.
Even the one during the sideline interview where he said, we're going to keep taking it at him. If he blocks 100, he'll block 100.
Well, yeah, no, that was fine. And I don't actually blame him for that strategy, right? Look, I think the idea that he said, like, they weren't preparing for UConn or whatever, like, he was saying, like, teams run sets in the Big Ten. Like, I think the specific question was, like, there are difficulties to prepare for with the number of actions that they run. And he's like, we see all those actions in the Big Ten. And again, that's true. UConn is not running different sets than everyone else. They just run more, right? Like, they run scissors, and they run, like, they get into their pistol action. Like, they do a bunch of different stuff that all sorts of Big Ten teams do that Illinois does, quite frankly. Illinois plays a lot out of scissors, a lot of pistol. They run elevator plays. Like, they do all this shit. So, like, that part, like, to me was ridiculous. But, you know, that's just kind of Brad's bravado. And then, like, the block 100 thing, like, look, I think the game plan going in was that, like, Ty Rogers would be a battering ram against Klingon and just try to get him into foul trouble. And he got the first foul early, and then he missed every shot the rest of the game. And I think it was a mistake by Brad to start the second half with Ty. I think they should have started Goody and just spaced the floor as much as they could and hope they made threes. But again, Illinois didn't make threes. I mean, the avalanche was coming, you know, the 30-0, you know, in that 30-0 run. But, like, they had three or four really good threes in the first 4 minutes of the second half as UConn went from, like, 5 to 12. Like, some really good looks. And they just missed all of them. Like, I think Guerrier, like, woefully went short on one. Damask went off the iron. Like, they just missed open threes, which you have to make against UConn, right? Like, realistically, if you're going to be UConn, you're going to have to make a bunch of threes. That's, you know, the one thing with Bama is that that's what they have, right? They're going to fire away. But yeah, like,
I mean, UConn didn't hit threes either.
No, like, UConn was not that good in the half court in that game. Like, I mean, it was funny. It was all the talk was offense, offense, offense. Like, I know I bet the over on Bovada. Like, it was a grinded out defensive game. Look, I talked to a coach who's played UConn this year, kind of asked him about all the intricacies and whatever, and he described UConn this way. I thought it was kind of a fascinating fascinating concept that doesn't get talked about at all is that everything UConn does at a high level and gets talked about all the time is all just curtains and decorations on what is the most elite transition team in America. That because they're so good defensively, that because everyone can handle the ball, because they're so good at hunting threes, that they are a absolute terror once they get running. And if you can stop them from running, you have a chance. Because in the half court, you can blow up actions, you can be physical. Like, you know, in Illinois' case, obviously they have 6'6" guys across the board. Right? They did a pretty good job in half court offense, I really thought.
Half court defense?
Yeah. Or yeah, against UConn's half court offense. I thought Illinois did a phenomenal job. But like as soon as they started missing long, you know, and I do think that was probably part of the thinking as well. With why they were so banging it onto the inside. Was that they felt like if they took a bunch of threes and there were a bunch of long rebounds, UConn was going to kill them in transition.
I mean, I guess if there's one team that should be better at pulling it away from the basket, it should be Grant Nelson in Alabama, right?
I mean, the thing about Nelson is he has not shot it that well.
If not him, then who, right?
No, 100%. Yeah. You're right. Well, and look, if nothing else, Alabama is not going to play. There will be no non-shooter. There will be no Ty Rogers. Right. And if there is, right, like if they say we're not going to guard Jaren Stevenson, we're not going to guard Grant Nelson, we're not going to guard, right? Because realistically, like, I mean, I know when Alabama played Arizona, Arizona didn't really guard Grant and just kind of dared him to shoot threes. And he took like 9 of them. Didn't make them.
Yes, we'll see if UConn does that. But like Stevenson hit like 5 threes the other night. Obviously, Reitzel can shoot if he's in there. Mark Sears hit like every three he took. Just up and down the lineup, you know, between the Alabama and UConn perimeter cores, there's a lot of high profile shooting up and down both those lineups. But, you know, it's all kind of leading to this inevitable Kling and Edie, which is going to be awesome.
Yeah, look, I mean, this is the championship game that I think we've wanted all year, right? If we can somehow get there, which we should. Right? I mean, both these teams are huge favorites. Don't want to skip over Alabama, obviously, because Alabama's, you know, a great story. And then, like, how high on the list of coaches is Nate Oates right now in the country? Like, if you're doing, like, a coach draft, how high are you picking Nate?
I mean, I had him very high before this. I think half of the SEC in my top 15 or something when I did it in the preseason. Obviously including him and Bruce Pearl and Musselman. And I'm a little cooler on Buzz Williams now than I was early in the preseason, but they got a 9 seed this year. They gotta be up there. The SEC is stacked with these great coaches. Now Oates can add that Final Four to the resume.
Yeah, look, like, I think the thing that stands out about Bama is that this group was never supposed to be as good. Like, we talk all the time about the curse of early entry and how challenging it is to deal with guys leaving when you're not anticipating that they're going to leave, right? I mean, Alabama got brutalized. Right, look, they knew Brandon Miller was a good, likely one and done. But Clowney, I mean, for at least the first half of the year, they thought was coming back. And then Bediako, they were shocked when he stayed in the draft. So there's, you know, there's a couple right there. You then lose Quinterly, who obviously there were rumors about, but like they were fully planning on Quinterly being the starting point guard. Like June 1st came around, they were like, Quinterly is our point guard. And sure enough, he goes in the portal, gets paid, whatever. Good for him. So they're scrambling. And then again, this is all happening with no coaching staff, like craziness that they are here right now. Craziness, craziness, craziness. Give him a lot of credit. Nate Oates has done a phenomenal job. Also on like the coaching stuff, right? Obviously the angles, there's all sorts of angles here. How close is Dan Hurley to Bill Self? Like, I think the conventional wisdom in college basketball right now is, like, Bill Self's the best coach in the country, and Rick is number two. And then there's, like, a wide gap between those two and everybody else. I think Dan is, like, right there now.
Yeah, he doesn't feel like it because he's still the, you know, this is only their second year as a dominant team. Where Kansas has had, like, 50 years. You know, the Dan Hurley, remember, at UConn, he took two years to rebuild. And they had, I think, two first-round exits, right? And then two national one national championship and a second Final Four, at least. So it's just happening so fast. He didn't have any Matt Painter, Tommy Lloyd. It was just the minute they got elite, they punched through with a championship.
Yes. Look, I do think that a lot of it, and you know, there's been a lot of credit given to Kamani Young and Luke Murray. I think that's part of it. I think, you know, UConn being back in the Big East has been part of it. I think Hurley being a great recruiter is a part of it. I think it's across the board stuff that's really impactful. But like, man, oh man, how dominant they've been. Like, again, I can't remember a team feeling this dominant.
Let's see. Alabama last year, they felt overwhelming, but not like inevitable.
No.
The CBS podcast was saying the platoon Kentucky team, which is fair.
Like, Gonzaga the COVID year was like that, and Baylor wound up like that. But I don't think during the tournament you felt like that. Part of that was because you always felt like they were on a collision course. And maybe, right, maybe, look, I think if Purdue had lost in, like, the Sweet 16 last year, we would perceive this as, like, a full collision course type thing, not just, like, Purdue maybe will be there, maybe they won't. Because people were so skeptical of Purdue, I think that's probably boosted the view of UConn. But, like, Purdue, man. Like, Purdue-UConn is definitely Gonzaga-Baylor vibes.
At least times two, I think.
It's Gonzaga Baylor vibes in terms of best teams in the country.
Yeah.
But way better in terms of narrative.
And, you know, maybe next week we should revisit all our preseason takes and stuff. Because I remember I had Purdue number one, and we both talked about it. It's like people are just not putting them number one because we have to penalize them for their embarrassing moment last year. There was no logic to it. There was no projection. It was just they need to take their penance. Speaking of things that you can do a victory lap over, remember the old Braden Smith, Tyrese Proctor debates?
Oh, my God. Tyrese Proctor is, like, really bad.
I know. I would take him at Providence.
I think he's going to go pro because he can't let the stock get any worse.
But all the playmaking he showed last year is non-existent. He just, like, misses threes.
This Duke team, it's weird. Like, when they're good, they're so good. But when they're off, they look like they hate playing with each other. And that was
I still think McCain's their best player. I don't get the Filipowski stuff. Like, oh, he can pass a little bit. Cool. I like never see him hit any jumpers. I'm sure that his percentages are actually strong. I'm sure he's got a lot of skill for a 7-footer. But like, don't we want like the athletic lob threat switchable guys instead of these passers?
Look, them losing to NC State. You know, I tweeted this like, that is a result that's going to follow John Shire for a really long time. Like, until John Shire wins a national championship, I think people will talk about the fact that he lost to NC State.
I think that's going to be more Duke fans than nationally.
Probably. Partially because the national media loves them some John Shire.
Maybe the dumbest tweet of the past couple months is anyone who was suggesting that DePaul would be in any different place if John Shire was their coach right now.
It's hilarious. Look, I think it's a huge year next year for Shire, right? They're going to come in with all this hype, all this aspiration, Cooper Flagg, Kamen Malawach, you know.
Like, Zay Evans, all these guys.
Yeah, huge recruiting class. Like, I would bet that on, you know, Tuesday, when we record next, like, I would bet that Bovada will have them as the national title favorite in the preseason. Like, that early, early future. But they have a lot of work to do to get this roster to the point where they're winning a championship. Because they're going to need better guards. Right? Proctor needs to go. McCain's going to go. Roach, I think, is 50-50 stay go portal. Stay pro in portal. I think Foster's an interesting piece to bring back. None of the freshmen are like can't miss elite guards. You're gonna have to get in the portal, but like, who is that guy? Right? Like to me, if I was Duke, like, I gotta just like tamper with an elite guard. Like, wanna know who I try to go get if I'm Duke? I'd like what does it cost me to get Jackson Shellstad?
I mean, he might be the Tyrese Proctor of next year in the sense that everyone will put him as an All-American based off of like a solid freshman year.
True. But they're going to need someone like that, right? Like a guy who really has shown some legit talent and promise. Like, they can't go in the portal.
What about Kylan Boswell?
He kind of stinks, doesn't he?
Well, they went Bradley down the stretch, but... And like, he had he had games where he had 20 points, games where he had 0 points. So maybe it's the same issue as Proctor, but...
What about Milos Uzan?
Do you want someone more ball dominant, though? How about JV McCollum?
If he goes in the portal.
I thought he's in the portal.
JV is in the portal?
I thought someone in my group chat sent that in today, but...
I don't know, maybe Trilly's got him. What about...
I was saying, Porter went from threatening to go to DePaul to now four of his starters are in the portal, but maybe McCollum's not in there yet.
How about this one? KJ Simpson, not in the portal yet. That would be the guy.
He's on every draft board, but as a second round, kind of mid to late second round guy. Yeah, that would be a good one. What about Pop Isaacs? Or is it too much shooting guard, not enough point guard?
I think that's too shooting guard. There's someone who's saying on Twitter that McCollum's going in, but he's not like a super reputable looking source.
Oh, and anyone who did an April Fool's joke today should go straight to prison. I'm surprised there weren't as many fake portal April Fool's stuff. If like you hit the For You tab on Twitter, it was all April Fool's stuff. Every bit of it. I saw John Beilein to Canisius. I saw Rick Pitino's going to retire. I saw every stupid thing you could think of. Oh, Bryce Hopkins to the portal. Everything. People getting 60 years, 70 years, 80 years of eligibility.
I will say, last Thursday or Friday, maybe even Wednesday, someday I was in Boston. I was at the meal table eating my media lunch, and at my same table was David Benedict, the UConn AD, and a couple of UConn like athletic department staff. And David Benedict was scrolling on Twitter, and he found the Simon Charles like fake account that tweeted that Ed Cooley was retiring, and he goes, "Oh, geez, Ed Cooley's retiring." And he, like, shows the tweet to, like, his staffer. And his staffer's like, looks at it for a second. He's like, I think that's a fake account.
Yeah, that's...
It's highly amusing.
You're just a weird individual if you post the fake stuff to Twitter.
It's a strange existence.
It's the same thing as like the players. Like I've been trying to explain to my group chat, you know, because Devin Carter was like, oh, maybe I'll come back. Like, no, he's not coming back. These kids are addicted to positive affirmation on social media.
Correct. Right?
Like I saw someone today, Eddie Lampkin's going to commit if he gets 500 likes on his post or something. You know, Ticket Gaines is always like, oh, I'm so sad. And everyone responds, oh, we love you, Ticket. You're the greatest, Ticket. Like, these guys are just addicted to, like, the positive comments. And that's the same with the fake news tweeters. They just want to, oh, I got 4,000 likes saying that Cooley's going to retire. Look at me.
So, to be clear, you don't think there's any chance that Devin Carter's coming back to Providence?
No.
Yeah. I'm with you.
I don't think so. I mean, it would be pretty cool. And Chris Dunn was a higher-rated draft prospect when he decided to come back for his senior year. And that was pre-NIL. But I don't think so.
Yeah, look, like, I would find it pretty unlikely as well. But you never know.
I mean, people should do, like, a retrospective on, like, what happened with the Marcus Smart coming back, or like the Terrence Jones, or some of these, like, because even like pre-NIL, like if they were getting illicit money, you know, from the FBI investigation, it seems like illicit money was like five figures. You know, like what were these guys doing? Perry Jones is another one. Chris Dunn worked out for Chris Dunn.
It is funny. Like Devin Carter could definitely get like two-way money to come back. I mean, shit, if Devin Carter hit the portal, he could probably get a million.
Yeah. Probably more. If AJ Storr's supposed to be getting 900,000, Devin Carter can get more than that. But then at that point, just go pro, because you have $3-4 million a year for 5 years sitting right there in front of you.
We'll see. Let's close the book. Any of the other Elite Eight teams worth mentioning? Look, I thought Tennessee played great. Dalton was phenomenal. They should be very good again. Like, they looked very high in the way too early with Zakai back, Adu back, theoretically at least one of Awaka and Estrella back. I thought Estrella did a better job on Edie than you could have realistically hoped for.
Adu got benched.
He's too skinny. Yeah, Estrella, Adu, Zakai,
Mayshak,
Gaines.
He's a scary defender. Like, you don't want him guarding the ball. It feels like he's going to steal it from the offense. But and then, yeah, these end-of-bench guys are going to be portal gold. Like, Freddie DeLeon and Cameron Carr got, like, a little bit of run when Vescovi had the flu.
They should try to keep Cam Carr. DeLeon's going to go. That's, like, an inevitability. DJ Jefferson's going to be a portal. I would imagine, like, one of the Waka and Estrella will be a portal. Cade Phillips could stay or portal. They should, like, what they really need is, like, they need, like, a three and a four.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And then Marquette, Oso is terrible. He's so bad. Like, the fact that he makes, like, three nice bounce passes a game is not over, you know, doesn't beat out the fact that he's a defensive center who cannot rebound. His offense is non-existent. That push shot is so garbage. I don't want any... Every day I was like, oh, he's got that push shot. Like, that is absolutely useless. And he's not even a great finisher on the rim.
Marquette really, like, shit the bed in this game.
Absolutely.
Everyone but Kolek was awful.
Joplin was like, his threes were wide open. Like, you could debate some of Cam Jones ones. Oh, some of, you know, the Joplin ones were like, check your feet, 5 seconds to shoot it. It was way off.
I guess the question with Marquette's future, we can assume Kolek is gone, we can assume Oso is gone. I would say we operate on the assumption Jones is back. And your core is like Cam Jones, Chase Rosh, David Joplin, Ben Goal.
Stevie Mitchell.
Oh, Stevie Mitchell's back, yeah.
Sean Jones, we'll see what he looks like.
That's the question, is how aggressive will they be portal for big and point guard? Because they have Norman and Jones for the point, and they have Gold and Amadou and
Hamilton. Hamilton.
Yeah, do they have a signee for 24 as a big?
Royce Parham is a 4, I think.
Yeah.
And then Demarius Owens is like an Omax, yeah, but like a little more ball handling, I think.
They've done a good job with high school kids of like signing guys that can like develop and be rotation players and whatever. But like, they're one of those teams that, if like, they're probably in the way too early top 25 on like April 10th, because they have Cam Jones back and Stevie Mitchell back and whatever. But once everybody takes portal guys, I think this roster might look a little underwhelming if they aren't aggressive.
So this is what's gonna. I mean, everybody going, oh, Shaka doesn't do portal, while their best player is from the portal, obviously Kolek. This is what they need to do. They need to convince Oso to come back. He's even slipping on mock drafts. Like, dude, just come back. Redshirt Sean Jones, get a portal point guard. So you have the portal point guard, you'll have Cam Jones, you'll have Stevie Mitchell, you'll have Joplin and Oso. Your bench, hopefully Gold sticks around. You'll have Lowry's good. Very, very athletic wing. You'll have Norman. Those will be your big three bench guys. Oh, and Ross, obviously. Ross has a 6-man. And then you can bring the Owens, Parham, and Hamilton along slow. And then Creighton, Trey Alexander stinks too.
Awful. But he's gotta go.
You don't think he can come back again for?
No, I think he's gotta go to the NBA in this terrible draft to see if he can get like a late first or early second, get a guaranteed contract. It's his only chance.
He's not a great shooter. He's tremendous in the mid range, but he can't get to the rim. Yeah. You have to be able to get to the rim if you're gonna be a scoring guard. Or you gotta shoot bombs. His defense, he's supposed to be like a very good perimeter defender, both against Oregon and against Tennessee. They had to switch him off Cousinard and Connect and put Shireman to be the defensive stopper.
That is
crazy. Creighton's defensive stopper was Baylor Shireman.
Gutted for Houston. I mean, the Shed injury is brutal. They also would definitely have beaten NC State, right? Like, no chance.
Yeah.
Theoretically, like, I mean, again, great year, top five, 4 straight years in the top five at KenPom. Will look a lot different next year. Theoretically, lose Shed, definitely. Or I think theoretically lose Cryer as well. I think both guys technically have one more year, but it's like kind of dicey.
Tugler is going to be a monster next year.
Tugler will be great. Francis will be good. And, you know, theoretically they've proven now they can take a guy in the portal or two and they'll be all right. But
who are the biggest jump guys we're sitting on? We said Shellstad, Tugler. Do you have any others that are like, this guy is about to absolutely explode?
I have a few. I think you could say both of the Pitt guards, right?
Yeah, Lowe and Carrington.
Lowe and Carrington.
We can sit down and come up with it, but
yeah, let's do this another episode. Yeah. Alex Condon would be one I would come up with. Momchilovich could be one.
Alex Caravan.
Maybe.
He has more of a diverse scoring package than he showed.
Opportunity wise, Elliot Cadeau, but I don't know if like talent wise.
He's too weird of a player, I think. I mean, he could average double digit assists per game as the full time starting point guard. But he's gonna average like 7 points and shoot like 25% from three or something.
Yeah. Let's see. Any other like big picture thoughts on last weekend? I would say we're probably good. I assume we're both picking UConn and Purdue and then UConn to win the championship.
Yeah.
I want to pick Purdue.
Trey Kaufman rank could explode next year.
That is true. He's going to put up some numbers. I mean, someone from Purdue is definitely going to explode. I don't know who it's going to be yet. It might be Heidi. It might be Colvin. It might be Kaufman Wren, but somebody's gonna put up some numbers.
They gotta get Mason Gillis back for next year.
He's a great player.
Send first packing.
All right, so that's the final games of the year. It is always bittersweet when you get to the point where there's no more multiple games at the same time.
You don't really feel the extended halftime until there's standalone games. But
well, the halftime is also 20 minutes in the term.
It doesn't feel like the commercial breaks have been longer.
They are a minute longer, supposedly.
Anecdotally, it doesn't feel. Carousel?
Yeah, let's go to the carousel. I think the big one since we last spoke was the Kelsey news at Louisville.
B?
Yeah, look, like, I think Pat Kelsey has a lot of the qualities that could make him a very good hire for Louisville, right? He's energetic, he's won a lot, he's, recruited at a high level, all that makes sense. But I do think his teams have always been a little underwhelming. Like, they've always been, like, supposed to rip through the league and generally have. Like, he's never like, man, like, what a coaching job. And then I think the other thing, you know, obviously lack of tournament success is a big deal. And the lack of, like, the high major terrain is a big deal, right?
Well, it's kind of crazy how Louisville was convinced that they were going to get this high major candidate. And they ended up, you know, going probably 10 guys down their list. But at the end of the day, and we've said this now for a while, excuse me. In the NIL era, just get a good coach and the rest will work itself out, right? Like, it's not necessarily an indictment on Kelsey that he hasn't broken through as a 12 seed at College of Charleston. When he's going to be, you know, he's going to have access to a whole nother level of resource and talent at Louisville. And I think this confirms that, you know, historical relevance is nice and everything, but that's way down the list in what coaches want in a job.
It was a fascinating search. I think in this day and age, Louisville was a harder sell, I think, probably partially because of conference realignment. I think partially because of the strength of the SEC now, right? So if you were – at the end of the day, 5 years ago, if you were Nate Oates or Bruce Pearl, you probably would have taken Louisville just because you felt like, all right, I have to. It's Louisville, right? It's an elite job. I'll get players I couldn't have gotten at Alabama. I couldn't get Auburn, whatever. Now, I think because of NIL, it's kind of like, all right, like what's the point, right? We have the investment, we have the facilities, we have the money, we have proven we can win here. Why would we leave? So look, I think that part is a huge factor in all of this. I think Pat Kelsey can do well. I just think it's a very like mediocre, we'll see what happens type of fire. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, I mean, they'll be back at the drawing board. I will say, I mean, I know people, you know, some of it was talked about, like the fact that he only got $2.3 million a year. Like, honestly, kind of great AD work by Josh Hurd, the AD. Because at the end of the day, like, if this doesn't work, and again, part of this is, you know, it will be out of his hands if it doesn't work. He will not get to make the next hire. But if it doesn't work, Louisville is going to be able to get out of this contract in 3 years, maybe even two. Right? I mean, the buyout would theoretically be, after 2 years, $7 million. Now, if they show any signs of progress in year one, they're going to have to extend it because that, you know, that contract is so low. So, so low. But, like, look, like, the money, like, that will be a great, great contract for the school if they do have to make a move pretty quickly. Look, they could probably fire him after year one. Honestly. If they had to. Not saying they should. Saying if they wanted to, they probably could. So. We'll see. Not like... not 100% convinced this hire works, but I'm not convinced it's so bad that you can't do it.
How about Oklahoma State?
Steve Lutz.
I'm going C-.
Wow, very low on Steve Lutz.
Well, at least with Kelsey, we've seen it replicated, right? He's had multiple good years at Winthrop, multiple good years, you know, at College of Charleston, and a retooling after last year. With Lutz, and we've seen it a lot now. These guys are just jumping after 1 year. And in this 1 year, Western Kentucky wasn't even that good. Like, they were a 15 seed. Like, they were a 13 or a 12. They were like a very mediocre Conference USA team. Because he wins the auto bid. And it's going to be the same thing with Matt Logie at Montana State getting Washington State. Like, yeah, he's got the pedigree from before and everything. But one mediocre year where you win the fluky conference tournament, and that's good enough? All right.
Look, the thing I'd say with Lutz, he already should have been a candidate based on the years he had at Texas A&M Corpus, right? He won the league twice, went to two tournaments. It's a big deal. I think.
Yeah, but does that? But that doesn't get you Oklahoma State. I mean, look at what Brad Underwood did in that league to get Oklahoma State.
No, I agree with you. So let me get there, right?
Yep.
I view it similar to Sprinkle, but with a worse job. At the end of the day, those guys would have been like, maybe get an interview, but probably can't get the job. And then they went and won at the level, and now they're like legitimate candidates, right? Like, they had less to prove, if that makes sense. Because people already kind of thought they were good, and then they had the great year at the new school, and now they're rolling, right? So to me, that's the job, that's the calculus. I'm not convinced, again, that is a great hire. Like, again, I think I'm pretty sure Oklahoma State could have had Nico Medved if they wanted to hire Nico Medved. And I don't see why you wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, after what he did in a much stronger league. I mean, and even to the Danny Sprinkle one, which I have the same general thought, but in the direct comparison of Sprinkle to Lutz, in Sprinkle's 1 year, they went to the NCAA tournament as an at-large. They had a, you know, they were... what, 14-4 in the league? Well, Western Kentucky was behind Sam Houston and Louisiana Tech. It wasn't bunched together like it was in the Mountain West, right?
Correct. That is fair. Let's see. Where else do we have to go in the
Andy cards? Enfield SMU. I'll give that a B minus.
I don't quite understand the process here, right? Like, you fired Rob Lanier.
It's not that good to fire your 20-win coach over.
Well, you fired him theoretically because you wanted, like, a name to go into the high major world with. Like, Andy Enfield is, like, a very boring guy.
Like, yeah, when they did that, I figured it was going to be Will Wade or Eric Musselman, yeah.
Right, if you were hiring Muss or Buzz or Tang or Will Wade, at least I would feel like, all right, like, we got somebody with some personality who can go out and recruit and go out and sell SMU and make us like a can't-miss destination. And instead you wind up with Andy Enfield, who's like kind of beating the case at USC, avoiding the hot seat. Like, yeah, like I think Andy Enfield's a fine coach. Like, I have no issues with Andy Enfield. I just don't quite understand, like, the logic behind it. So, it makes USC very interesting. I do think Muss is the leader there based on some kind of inner workings, there's some behind-the-scenes politics that I don't really know how to explain on this program.
They released that video of them on the bus. And then I saw Curry Hicks Sage be like, oh, he didn't know it was released. And I thought it was a bit. But it turns out it wasn't a bit. He actually must have not want that video released because he wasn't committed to staying.
Correct. Super strange.
The fact that that wasn't a joke was like, okay.
Super, super weird.
Which can then set off the chain of Beard to Arkansas. And then we'll see if Will Wade still wants Ole Miss.
Beard did get an extension this past spring. And I'm not 100% convinced he can take Arkansas this spring. Like, I think there's a chance they just have to skip over Beard and go to Will Wade.
Which, that's not a bad consolation prize at all.
Agreed. Charleston hired Chris Mack.
Makes the whole Pat Kelsey, Chris Mack thing look absolutely hilarious, but
it's ridiculous, right? Also, like, do people actually think that Chris Mack is a worse coach than Pat Kelsey?
That was exactly what I was going to say. Like, wouldn't you rather have Chris Mack at Louisville than Pat Kelsey?
I don't actually like Mack at Charles because I'm worried he's taking this job for the wrong reasons.
That's kind of what we were saying all along.
Right. He's in this for the check and for Charleston. Which, by the way, I don't blame him. It's a beautiful place. And a great, great opportunity to win. Realistically, Chris Mack will win at Charleston because the floor is very, very high. And once he wins 20 games 2 years in a row at Charleston, he'll get whatever high major he wants, if he wants one. Or he'll work in Charleston for $1 million a year the rest of his life and retire. Neither are bad options.
Yeah, I think I'll give this a B+. Because obviously the pedigree is really strong. He's not that far removed. His Louisville tenure looks a lot better in hindsight.
You ain't lying there.
But it's does he really want it? And Charleston moving to the A-10, which is bizarre.
I'm trying to think of the other high major jobs that we haven't talked, right? We talked Vandy.
How about Florida Atlantic hiring assistant? This is an F.
You're out on John Jacobs?
You're Florida Atlantic. You just had the two best years in the history of your school. You got to strike while the iron is hot.
Well, they struck while the iron was hot and got the guy who's worked for Mark Few and Scott Drew. The two best coaching trees in the sport.
You should have been able to get a sitting, like, high-level mid-major head coach, right?
Who are you trying to go get?
Wasn't Josh Schertz an alum?
They weren't going to get Schertz over Slew, but yes.
How about Dustin Kearns from Appalachian State or Bob Ritchie from Furman? Or
okay, so seriously, like, do you think that it's a better job? Like that you think that Ritchie, I'll give you. Do you think that Dustin Kearns is a better hire than John Jenkins?
Yeah, look what he's already done at Appalachian State. Was one of the top 75 team this year. Appalachian State, they beat Auburn. And he won games at Presbyterian prior to that.
That is true. Look, I like Jacus. I think Jacus is a good hire. But I understand your point.
This kind of feels like the Florida Gulf Coast, right, where they lost. They went from Enfield to Joe Dooley, right?
Correct.
And then Joe Dooley left. They hired that Michael Fly, who didn't work. And then all the buzz is going from Florida Gulf Coast.
That's true. We'll see. I think Jake is... I'm fine to give it a C. I wouldn't give it an F. Maybe I'm pulling a... Mike DeCourcy, I had lunch with Kim English, so it has to be a good hire. I've texted John Jacobs before, so it has to be an okay hire.
Holtman a B.
Yeah.
Sprinkle C plus. Want to see it more. If Louisville hired Richard Pitino, that would have been like a F.
Dusty and DeVries, I think, are both fine, right? I think Dusty's probably an A minus. DeVries is probably like a B plus A minus.
Yeah.
Langton's like a B plus A minus.
Schertz to St. Louis is an A plus.
Yeah, that's an elite hire.
If he replicates the same season he had at Indiana State at St. Louis, then he's already done more than Travis Ford, right?
If he does that, he'll be one and done.
Yeah.
So, Ben McCollum to Drake. He finally took a job. The impossible has happened.
I'll give it a... Why not? I saw he's won, what, 4 championships in the last 8 years?
Correct.
I'll give that an A. Why did he want Drake over Missouri State? Was that specific to budgets or salary or what?
I'm not entirely sure what the deal was. I think Drake might have like a better NIL setup, but I don't know that for a fact.
Missouri State, Quanzo Martin, C minus.
And we already saw that it didn't work with Steve Prohm. I don't know why you would do it with Quanzo Martin.
Maybe I'll move from C minus to D plus, maybe.
Jared Calhoun to Utah State.
That's an A.
That's a great hire. I loved this. I also love that like their entire like search seemed to just be like coaches who never make the tournament but are pretty good. Todd Simon, Jared Calhoun, Todd Kowalczyk, and Calhoun seals the deal.
Youngstown State's a tough job. He turned really that hard. Around.
Yeah. And plus, he'll be like he's an elite portal recruiter, which I think is great for Utah State, because you're not going to win just with the players in the state.
And then it was Preston Spradlin to James Madison, right?
Correct. That was an A, for sure.
Yeah. They seem like they could really take off.
It feels like it, doesn't it?
Supposedly, I saw they have 22,000 students. Their football team's good. They're in the, you know, just moved up to a slightly better conference.
They need, like, that American invite to really take off.
Oh, Mark Byington to Vanderbilt? Yeah, I mean, JMU's had a great year. He was good at what, Georgia Southern before?
Yes.
Like a B plus then, yeah.
Are there any other hires we want to hit down? I think we've gotten most of them, right? I mean, we can do more formal grading later.
Yeah.
Louisville, Michigan, West Virginia. I mean, Diebler was an F, obviously, in Ohio State.
Absolute yeah. F.
It's an F minus. Whether he wins or not.
Coach in DePaul.
Jake Diebler could win a could win three national championships in a row at Ohio State, and I would still say the hire was an F.
I mean, it was the Ben Johnson. Hired a guy off the staff you just fired.
See, other hires, other high majors. Have there been any others that moved? I don't think so.
Seems like Leonard Hamilton staying pat.
Seems like it, yeah. I mean, there's always a surprise, but I don't think that's the one of them.
The next year hot seats, we got Kyle Neptune. We got Bobby Hurley.
Yep.
Johnny Dawkins, maybe.
Yep. I just can't believe we can't say Brad Brownell anymore.
Oh, we could probably say Mike Young.
Mike Young. They must be one of the big losers of the portal.
They must have no money. The whole team hopped in the portal.
I also found it funny, like, everyone went in, and, like, the one guy who came back was, like, the guy that was, like, the worst player. It's like, oh, well, good news, guys. My gel Poteet wants back in the party.
I mean, Lynn Kidd already off to Miami.
For, like,
I'm surprised Nickel left.
The rumored number for Lynn Kidd is, like, $750,000.
He's a very good player.
But $750,000?
Well, wasn't that also the number for the kid from the Belmont point guard, or was that over 2 years?
I don't know yet if it was two or not. That's the big question. Look, I'd say this. Lynn Kidd's a very good player. Was Lynn Kidd not the seventh best big in the ACC this year? Baycott? Filipowski? PJ Hall? Like, minimum those three are better. Quentin Post probably was better. Like,
all those guys are gone for next year.
True. Like, DJ Burns right there. Norchad right there. Bai and Dango right there. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I'd be spending that type of bread on Lynn Kidd, but it's not terrible.
Well, that team now, right? It's Nigel Pack, Jaleel Bethea, Wuga Poplar, Norchad, and Lynn Kidd.
Theoretically,
that team's going to be in the top 25, at least in the preseason.
They only have like six players, though. It's the only problem right now.
Austin Swartz.
Yeah.
Was a top 50 recruit. They still have they must still have a bench guy somewhere.
Seems like the whole bench went in the port.
Oh, is Kyshawn George going to the NBA?
Seems like it, yeah.
That's a disaster. I don't hate him, but
I mean, if they're Pac Poplar Kid, then that's a pretty good start.
Bethea's the top five player in the country.
Yeah. That's true. What other like big portal trends are there to discuss?
Oh, Colorado got blasted too.
Colorado got killed. Yeah. Colorado's weird, like all their role players. It's like Luke O'Brien and Hadley and
Lampkin.
Minnesota hasn't had it go as bad as I thought, but it's been all the in-state kids, which is, like, particularly strange.
Yeah, they're still bringing back both their point guards, Cam Christie, and as of now, Dawson Garcia. We'll see. But
Yeah, very skeptical there. Riley Kugel to Kansas. This was a hilarious recruitment. He put out a top four before entering the portal. He then had multiple schools on that top four who he had never spoken to. Kansas always seemed like the likely destination. Feels like the right type of risk, right? Like big talent, athletic, can shoot the basketball, like fits Kansas. And if it works, great. And if not, whatever. You got a bunch of scholarships.
Didn't I think Golden it's risky
for
through?
Him to go there this early is the only thing I would say.
Well, I think now that you have free transfer, there is no more risk.
Well, the risk is if he doesn't play.
Right, but if you don't play, you can just leave again. So I guess the risk is wasting a year.
Correct, which he
but you're
can't
not condemning yourself.
Because he still thinks he's an NBA player.
Right, like all these like redshirt guys that are leaving, like Iowa State's had a bunch. Like if Jelani Hamilton was a top 150 recruit, he doesn't have to go to Nebraska, Omaha to play, right? He can go if, you know, he could try to go to Temple or something. And then if he doesn't play at Temple, he can just leave again and go down to Ryder, right? Or if he plays well at Temple, he can go back to Iowa State. Right now, with that, there's no restriction at all. You can just try to go as high as you can all the time.
True. I think the only thing I would say with Kugel is if your goal was this spring to go to a place where you would make sure you get your numbers and you could get your NBA stock back up, right? Because in theory, what he's saying is, like, I didn't play as much in Florida this year because they, like, got too many guys, right? They got Zion Pullen and they got Clayton. And they, you know, those guys were better than me. So now I need to go somewhere. Like, I would want it to go, like, a place where I knew I was, like, the star. Unquestioned. Like, I would want it to, like, Wake Forest. But I also understand the allure of Kansas, and I think the money is good. Supposedly, I think it's like $500 for him, which better price than Jacoby Gillespie.
Yeah.
Gillespie, like, that's an interesting one. Or Maryland. Gillespie comes in, solidifies the point. They've lost a lot of these guys, which, you know, theoretically is like dead weight. But, like, I do think you wanted to keep Kaiser if you could have.
And you were a big Jonathan Lamothe guy.
Yeah, he's getting, like, no recruitment. I
saw he's visiting Stetson.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Well, even like Reed Ducharme, the highest schools on his list were like Bryant and Wyoming. And that's someone with 4 years of eligibility.
I wonder if – I think Sienna might get involved with Reed Ducharme.
Oh, what are your thoughts on GMAC?
Skeptical but excited about the recruiting aspect.
There you go. Feels like your guy Michael Elias is lost in the shuffle here. I mean, I was saying to somebody today, it's like there are 500 dudes who played at the mid-major level, are between 6'3 and 6'5 and average 14 points a game.
Correct.
Every day, 10 of those guys hit the portal.
I mean, yeah. Plus Mike Lilly's going to get killed for how bad his team was. Like, no one's going to want him.
Yeah. He's going to end up at, like, Fordham or, like, Miami of Ohio or something.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's one of those guys where I think it's interesting. Like, there's a lot of guys in the portal this year that are, like, kind of projection portal guys. Like, the kid that Illinois just took, Jake Davis from Mercer. It's a little different because he has, like, a defined role, just like a shooter. But, like, realistically, you're Illinois. You're taking Jake Davis right now after 9-4 as a freshman because you think if he had come back and averaged 16 and 7 as a sophomore, the price would have been a lot higher.
Right, exactly.
Right? So, like, Michael Ealy last year, he was, like, MAC Rookie of the Year, 9-10 points per game. Does he go to, like... Like, if he transfers last year, does he go to, like, Butler? Does he go to, like, Loyola, Chicago? Like, it's probably, like, that level,
yeah.
right? And yeah. then instead, you know, he has a bad year, and it's like, oh, shit. Like, now it's, I don't know, it's probably, like, the Horizon League, honestly. Like, it's probably, like, Youngstown State level.
At that point, just go back to Siena.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I would take him over Siena, to be honest. He was part of blowing up this team. Him and Duru Gordon. How about Duru Gordon, Mr. Coach Killer?
Yeah, I saw you tweeted. He's got every coach fired so far. Have you heard anything on Garway?
Not really, no.
I haven't seen a single list or anything. Besides, like, an off mention that he's just going to go to Georgetown, which I don't really get that one, but I don't know if Georgetown's going to get a lot of the guys who they think they're getting.
But Georgetown seems to have, like, no direction in the portal. Like, the Danny Wolf, Doug McDaniel thing at least makes sense. Now it's like, we have no idea what we're doing.
Because there's just too many guys that are all the same. And it's like, how do you know which one to pick? Like, you end up picking one who happens to have five other high majors in there. And then one comparable guy will end up at, like, URI. It's just like a goofy game of musical chairs. Or I guess it's more of like a silent auction or something.
Every so often, I'm enjoying, like, every so often you just see, like, a visit and you're like, all right, that school must have the NIL. Like, was Doug McDaniel visiting TCU? Someone was visiting TCU and then Doug was visiting K-State. And you're like, yeah, like, that's the NIL.
It is Dante that. Maddox is visiting TCU, right?
Big 12 money. Hold on, I'll find the TCU visit. My phone is very slow at the moment. Visit TCU.
Pretty
sure Doug McDaniel did visit TCU.
Yeah.
And Dante Maddox. And TCU did an in-home visit with Frankie Collins. It feels like, though, we were texting about this, like, TCU just tends to get all these, like, random guys. They just kind of scrape together a weird roster.
Yeah, as I was watching Francisco Firabello fire a floater over the backboard, it's like, this dude was a starting point guard for TCU, like, 4 years ago.
Well, TCU had Jaden Ledee. They had Firabello. Like, Jameer Nelson was a complete out-of-nowhere one last year. Like, why is this guy going there? And then it's, like, never heard from again. Like, they're just, like, so irrelevant, too. Like, they're always just, like, fine. These guys are usually not the best players on the team. They just kind of collect these. Like, Micah Peavy went there and never got better.
Lampkin was there.
Shahada Wells was there.
Yeah. I liked those early Jamie Dixon teams with Desmond Bain and Brodziansky and Kenrich Williams.
Yeah. Let's see. What other portal teams, names, etc. are interesting?
Oh, what about St. John's? Are they're in the Georgetown boat where the guys they wanted and thought they had, they can't get anymore?
St. John's has, like, an identity crisis where, like, they're recruiting, like, Bensley Joseph, but they're also recruiting, like, trying to get Kadari Richmond into the portal. They're recruiting, you know, Cliff, but, like, now Cliff, everybody's recruiting Cliff. I don't understand why everyone's recruiting Cliff. Like, why is Kentucky and Kansas recruiting Cliff?
Well, like, Kansas should just either keep Hunter Dickinson or play Flory Badunga.
Right, that's what I don't understand.
Yeah. Like, Kentucky has Jaden Cadence, Ugonna Kingsley, Big Z.
I think Kingsley might be in the portal.
Currently in the portal, really?
No, will be in the portal.
Oh, will be in the portal. That was what I assumed, but then toward the end of the year, he was playing a ton, so I figured maybe run it back, but I mean, Cliff's a good player. Like, I'm sure I'd rather have him.
He has zero offense. He has zero offense.
But those big, physical, super long centers get you far.
It's true.
Yeah, St. John's, and you know, I've been telling people this too. Like, when you have so many spots to fill, you got to get a couple on the board early so you can like mold the direction of your team. All right, like if you take Bensley Joseph, then you need more shooting on the wing. You know, if you take Cliff, that's gonna be a big NIL guy. Then you got to go bargain basement at the guards. So like, you need some more pieces on the board when you have to get 4 or 5 transfers.
I also think people are, especially when they have like a lot of spots to fill, they're not like moneyballing it properly. Like, again, part of this is, you know, if you have more money, it's easier to deal with. But like, if I'm St. John's and I have $2 million, I would rather, you know, 2 to 3 million. Or if I have 3 million, like, I want 3 like studs. Like, I would spend $700,000 each on like Kadari Richmond, Cliff Omori, and Riley Kugel over, and I'm using Riley Kugel as like a, you know, bizarre example because I think he's, even though I think he sucks, overspending $300,000 on 9 guys.
Exactly. Yeah.
You gotta have, and this is more pronounced at the mid-major level. Like, I see these mid-major teams that have like $300,000 NIL, $200,000 NIL. They have 9 spots. My guys, like $30,000 a year, like the kids you can get for $30,000, just out evaluate someone for a guy for free.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
I've been saying that with the whole, you know, Kansas or Creighton or Villanova paying everyone on the team. Like, why are you paying $100,000 for the 13th man? Like, what's that guy going to do if he gets $10,000 or $20,000?
Right.
Save that 80 for next year, then, for, you know? But, yeah. I think Butler is an interesting spot. Because it looked like a disaster.
Seems like they've weathered the storm a little bit.
Seems like they just chose to pay Pierre Brooks. And Telford's testing the waters, but not portaling yet. And I think that's probably the right move. Keeping those two over DJ Davis.
I would have paid Telford. Look, I think these combos, like I know there was a lot of takes about Boopie Miller. Like, Boopie Miller goes in the portal, and people are like, what are they doing? You know, what's going to happen to Wake, whatever? Like, Wake has money. Like, this was not Wake being like, we don't have the bread. You just can't, like, you can't pay these small shooting guards a ton of money. Like, it's going to screw up your roster. Those guys are a dime a dozen. It's very easy to replace Boopie Miller. It's not very easy to replace Jameel Telfer. It's not very easy to replace Efton Reed or Hunter Salas. Or, you know, I think they're going to lose Hunter Salas or others, but like those big wings, the point guards, and the fives. That's where the money's going to be spent. You can't be spent, like, if you could get DJ Davis for $150,000 and, like, he's your, you know, sixth man scorer, that's awesome. Like, I would take DJ Davis at, like, Kansas as the sixth man for $200,000. But I wouldn't pay $400,000 to keep DJ Davis.
Especially because Finley Bizjack might just be able to be 80% of DJ Davis next year.
Right. There's so many guys though. Like, even if you didn't you're joking about there's, you know, it's 4 million mid major players average 14 a game in the portal, right? Like if I lost DJ Davis, if I lost DJ Davis tomorrow, I would look up and say, okay, well, I can recruit Alston Mason, I can recruit Dom Harris, I can recruit Noah Reynolds, I can recruit Keon Menefield, I can recruit Chaunce Jenkins, I can recruit Sincere Parker, I can recruit Isaac McBride, I can recruit Deion Brown, I can recruit
Jason Edwards.
Yeah, Jason Edwards. I mean, I'm, and those are guys that I all consider like high minus, not even like star high major players, like Primo Spears, and I can.
I wouldn't do that one.
he's approaching approaching Sean Dewar Gordon levels of coach killer, right? Yeah, like all those guys, like Makai Williams from Arlington, Colby King from Tulane, if he were to enter the portal. I think he did enter the portal, didn't yeah. he?
There's a kid from Rice who's a kid from Sam Houston today.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
There's a Middle Tennessee kid, Justin Porter, who's in there. Like Marquise Warwick from Northern Kentucky, Jalen Leach from Fairfield, right? Like the difference in who's going to win and who's not is the people who actually know how to evaluate those kids and like figure out who's good and who's not, and the people who know how to the people who are good at actually allocating their resources.
I think we're going to be short on bigs again this year.
It feels like there's been an influx of bigs into the portal of guys who are like, I don't know, I guess he's probably high major.
Like, I know Providence is trying to get Sam Alexis to visit. And, like, you look at his stats, you're like, oh, okay, maybe. And then his other teams that are trying to get him to visit, supposedly, are all in the SEC.
Sam Alexis is good enough for Providence, for sure. He's really good. He's an SEC player. He's like a $400,000 guy.
We'll see if he makes a visit or something. But that's a guy, again, who averaged 10 points a game at Chattanooga. I guess Arkansas took Josh Cohen from UMass for, I guess, a ton of money.
No, I heard that was like $100,000.
Oh, Trilly had put in the in his Discord that Josh Cohen's direct quote was that the money was huge. And also, he decided so early.
That was a weird one, Josh Cohen.
You're like, what was the rush, dude? But maybe he opens up if Musk takes USC. But
I think you just go to USC.
If he was so tied to Musk, but yeah.
I don't think it was Arkansas that he was committing to. But anyway, anything else?
No.
All right, let's wrap it up. See you on the other side. It's been a fun year. Appreciate y'all joining us. It's going to be a great championship. Looking forward to it.